Hello and welcome to the Under Center podcast. I am your host, Darren Marr, and I'm joined, as always, by two of the cover stars of the new college football game that EA Sports are making, Fionn Molloy and Jake Woolhead. Lads, how are you doing this week?
Excellent. Yeah, pretty good. Excited Great. For this show.
Perfect. Yeah, well, since it is Super Bowl week, we do have an extra podcast for you. And on this one, we are delighted to be joined by Dana O'Gorman. Dana is the editor and senior writer for Air Tour Football and covers the AFC and NFC West. So she is the perfect person to help us preview the Super Bowl this weekend and talk about some other NFL news. How are you today?
I am good. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
No problem at all. No problem. It's great to have you on. So just before we actually start talking football, if you are watching this on YouTube, it would really help us out if you could like this video and share it on your social channels. And also if you could subscribe to the Dynamo Podcast Network. The Dynamo Podcast Network is the home of so many great podcasts. So when you are finished here with us, you can check out the other shows that are available, from music shows like King's Court to football like The Upper Tier. While you're at it, also, why don't you follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/UnderCenterPodcast. We're at Twitter at UnderCenterPod, Instagram at UnderCenterPod, and we are actually also now on TikTok at UnderCenterPod. But then it's been quite an odd year this year, football-wise. Obviously, no training camps, no fans for the most part, but the NFL and the teams have done their utmost to make sure that this season went ahead, barring the odd hiccup, but nothing too major. What have you made of it?
I was surprised, to be honest with you. I really, about, you know, the beginning of September, even a month into the season, I just kept waiting for them to call it. Like, I just kept thinking, we are not going to make it through the season. Maybe they'll shorten it to a 10-week season. Something is going to give here. And to be honest with you, I was pretty impressed that they managed to pull off a full season. And like you said, there were a couple hiccups, you know, the constant postponement for the Ravens, but we're not going to postpone anything for the Broncos, you know, like all these weird things that were going on. But for the most part, I think they did a pretty good job, or at least the optics of what they were doing, I think, seemed like that they pulled it off pretty well. So I'm impressed with the NFL for putting so much effort into getting a full season. And we'll just see, hopefully that continues for just a few more days, and then we'll be in the clear for a while.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, no, I thought the season went off brilliantly, because I'm sure we're all part of loads of group chats and just following and social media and stuff. And every chat I was in was saying, the preseason's cancelled. They're only getting 1 month into the season. They're not getting the Super Bowl. It's going to cancel. But no, I think it was only a few cancelled games, and they were just rescheduled and kind of went on with no hiccups or very little hiccups anyway. I actually was very impressed with how they handled it, considering how unprecedented this whole thing is. We're all living in like a new world. So having them, it's nice to have some live sports. I'm only interested in the NFL really. So to have that to watch every week, that was just brilliant. I was so, so delighted for the whole season to go through.
Yeah, one thing that really stood out for me as well was that the NFL took really seriously the punishments that they had. They took a pick off the Raiders, I believe, for failing to comply with the guidelines that they set. So I think that really set a tone for the rest of the league, and it helped them keep control. Dana, like you said, the optics were very good for us watching. It felt comfortable. We didn't feel like it was being forced too much for the sake of money or anything beyond the sport. So yeah, I think they did a pretty good job. I think the optics were really good. And the players in general did seem to stay pretty healthy. There wasn't a couple of outbreaks in a couple of teams, but I think most teams avoided any massive issues with the virus.
I was just going to say, I agree. And I think that we need to give kudos to the players for that. You can tell that they took it pretty seriously. I think at first there was a little bit of laxity, and we saw that with the Raiders, like you mentioned. You know, they had all those players show up at that event, and it just looked terrible until they realized what really was going on. So kudos to the players and their families. Think about what their families had to, you know, really isolate to keep their player healthy. And I think they deserve a lot of the credit for that.
Yeah, definitely. I think like we were saying with the teams and everything that was put in place for, I think when the Hard Knock series was on for pre-season, that the amount of testing that was done by teams every day to make sure that players are safe, the braces so that they knew who was in close contacts with who, so that if there was a potential issue with anyone that they could find a straight away to make sure that it didn't get worse. And I think, yeah, that's it. They did everything they can in terms of rescheduling games if they needed to. I know the Ravens think twice they got rescheduled, and I think, like we were saying about the Broncos, where they lost a whole position group for a week too, which was pretty interesting to see that game. I think what was it against the Saints, where that was the game that they had no quarterback, wasn't
no
it?
No quarterback.
It was the wide receiver playing quarterback. It was just it was a crazy game, and even he was laughing throughout that game because he knew, like, he had like a week to practice, and then he came up and he was a starting quarterback. So I think it was his first time since high school. Fair play to him. He went through it, and he had a smile on his face throughout the whole game.
Yeah,
and he did better than Jake Luton.
Dana, what have you thought of the expanded playoffs this year? Because this was the first year now that an extra team from each conference got into division, which actually also meant only one side from each division got the bye. What did you make of the new setup?
I have to say, I didn't like it. And I know that a lot of people did like it because, you know, it let in a bigger playing field. And I get that. But to the same extent, I think it watered it down just a little bit. I think that we saw that there was an impact to only one team getting a bye. And I think that it's just something, and maybe, you know, maybe it's just change and I just need to get over it. I'm not sure. But I just really felt like the old format was a little better suited to as rough and tumble as this game actually is. And I think that hopefully, I doubt they'll go back because there was quite a profit margin in having one extra team in each conference in the playoffs. Obviously that brings their fans, for those who had fans, and, you know, extra TV revenue. And I did like the way that they split it up on the television. I don't know. I just felt like it made that fight for that second seed not as important. And I think that it should be important to get that second seed. Whereas you saw people talking, it's like, doesn't matter if we have the second seed or not, because we'll do this and do that. And it just kind of watered it down for me. So I can't say I was a fan, but I don't expect them to change it back.
Yeah, well, I think maybe for the season like it was now, where I guess the idea of home field advantage was totally taken away from teams anyway with no fans. I think maybe next season we might see teams care a little more for that second seed if it means that they're guaranteed, or well, almost guaranteed throughout the whole playoff series, that they will have home advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe that will make a difference. And once again, the reason I don't think that they'll change it back is because they'll make extra money off of that extra game. And so especially if fans are back, they'll have quite a bit of extra revenue there. And they're trying to make that up for this year. I mean, we have to admit that the league lost a lot of money this year. But at the same time, I just really feel like getting those two top teams, they fought to get there. They deserve that full week of rest instead of just the number one seed. Because we have to keep in mind, a lot of times that number one seed has a lot to do with the division that you play in and how tough your division is. And no disrespect to the AFC West, but the Chiefs had a pretty easy go through their division. And so I think that sometimes that takes some of that competitive advantage away, and it's not quite as fair.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I just thought we had this discussion a couple of weeks ago on the podcast about the expanded playoffs. I think we were kind of in between. We had said that, like, I mean, it's more playoff football. The NFL loves the stories that Fiona had mentioned a few times, that the NFL loves creating stories because it generates interest, it generates fans, you know, kind of stuff like that. But I'm kind of on your side, Dana, with this, is because I just don't want to feel like the playoffs are a gimme. And I want to feel like my team has kind of earned their way into the playoffs and have been able to have a full chance to kind of go through the whole playoff system instead of just kind of being in there automatically just because of how big the playoffs could be. I'm glad, like, they keep it kind of small, but I was happy with the expanded playoffs this year, I think. But if they went bigger, I wouldn't be happy with it.
Yeah, I think maybe people would have looked at it a little bit different if one of the eight seeds or the extra seeds had made it all the way and get that kind of Cinderella story of, in any other year, we wouldn't have sneaked in. But Danny, I think you're bang on. The NFL is a money-making machine at this point, and I don't think they're ever going to go back. to making less money in a year. I just don't see how they get that by the board.
Well, Dana, can I throw this proposition your way? Because I said this to the guys on the week we talked about the playoffs, and they don't seem to be for it, but I proposed a maybe an NBA style sort of playoff scenario where, because in the playoffs, more teams make the playoffs than don't. So if people are concerned with the bye week as well, so I actually extended the bye week that each division winner can get a bye week. And then that would allow more teams to come into the playoffs. So then the next best eight records after that would go into a wild card weekend then. An even more super wild card weekend, you could call it. But so that means that teams are still fighting for the bye week. And it is, like you were saying, that each division then, a certain division won't feel shortchanged like that. An AFC South side won't feel like the Colts and the Titans won't feel upset that they didn't get the one seed because they're in a much tougher division than the Chiefs.
Don't feel like you have to indulge this crazy man's ramblings. We already shot him down a couple of weeks ago. He just wants to keep bringing this back up again.
Because it's a great idea.
Someone to agree with him.
He's trying to generate hype about it.
Just wait till I have this meal with Roger Goodell and I give him my idea and then he goes with it, okay? I'll get 12.5% credit. It'll be fine.
He might go for it because there's two reasons. There'd be more teams, so more money, and it would mean a longer season. So he'd get his couple of extra weeks out of football, that's for sure. You know, I don't know that I like that. I sit just with one thing came to mind. It's like, really, did Washington deserve a bye week this year? You know, I think, and that's something you have to kind of keep in mind. Yes, they won their division. And I will say that division, as bad as they were, was kind of fun to watch because every week, whoever was on top changed. And I thought that was kind of a fun little aspect to it. But to be quite honest, I just don't know that if we need to expand it more than it already is. I think that it should be less teams make the playoffs than don't make the playoffs. I think that is kind of standard American fare. That's what we want. You know, we like the idea of David versus Goliath. I mean, that's, you know, in American sports everywhere, but at the same time, it has to be a reward. And there are, you know, bonuses built into playoffs. There are all kinds of things that come with that. And so I think it needs to be more of a reward. And four teams on a, or it would be eight teams on a bye. I think we'd have football tomorrow. So
I think me and Fiona are on your side on this one. We're all against Dara here because.
But it's a good thought. Good
guys, it's going to happen, right? It's going to happen. Like I'm saying, it's more money. You know, they already said they want to bring in the extra game week. Here's your chance to do it. And more teams feel like they're in a playoff. It should happen if they want to do it that way. But look, we'll move on anyway. And we'll move on because this is Super Bowl week. So if it's only fair that we do talk a little bit about this Sunday's game. And let's start with the team from the division that you actually covered, the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm not surprised to many that they are in their second Super Bowl in 2 years. Coach Andy Reid, after years of being one of those great coaches who just couldn't win a Super Bowl, it now has the opportunity to be one of those coaches who can never not win a Super Bowl. So what have you made of the Chiefs season this year?
You know, it's interesting. I actually live in Kansas City. And so I am inundated with Chiefs stuff at all times. Even though they are not my personal favorite team, it's been a lot of fun for a couple of reasons. Number one, everyone pretty much in the AFC has really rallied around this team. I think that Andy Reid is such a well-respected coach and people really love that he got this second, you know, chance, this rebirth here in Kansas City. And the Eagles history is not just sitting on his shoulders. So I think that is wonderful. And then of course, there is Patrick Mahomes, who truly has become the face of this league. He's real hard to dislike. I mean, he's just a great kid and he's so talented. But I think about when you look at this season, we have to remember that the Patriots dynasty was an outlier to football. This is not the way it works in football. They were in their own kind of bubble. But unfortunately for every other team left in the league, that has now become the standard. And so that, which is completely illogical and irrational if you look at it, but that's okay. But I think what people see in this Kansas City Chiefs team is that possibility. They see the possibility of repeats. They see the possibility, especially after Patrick Mahomes' contract extension. They see him being there for a long time. So you have this kind of warmth that there's going to be a new dynasty. There's going to be this new Patriots team. I don't know that that is going to happen. And there's a million reason why that it's longer than an hour long podcast. But at the same time, I think you just see kind of that youth and that vibrance and that excitement from this team, plus the sheer talent of it. So last year when they went to the Super Bowl, it was the offense who had to overcome the defensive issues. But throughout the season, the defense got better and better. And so they almost had a little bit of an underdog feel to them, even though Patrick Mahomes was Patrick Mahomes. This year, they weren't the underdogs. They were the dominant. And then, so I think that people are excited to see the continuation. You don't see a team, let's say like the Los Angeles Rams, who went to the Super Bowl, did a horrible job in the Super Bowl, but they went and then just completely missed the playoffs the next year. You saw the consistency. You saw the consistency from the players and the coaches and the team strategy. And I think that that's just really encouraging to all fan bases that maybe it's possible even for their team.
Dana, I have a question for you, and you touched on it a little bit about speaking about this possible dynasty and the Patriots parallels that have been drawn. One of the things that stood out to me is everyone talks a lot about the man on the other side of this final, Tom Brady, how he's made 10 Super Bowls. It's him and LeBron James have made the most championships out of any professional sport in America. There's been talk about that record standing for a long time. I want to know, do you think Patrick Mahomes is maybe the only guy with a shot at actually breaking that record, in terms of he's already reached 2 Super Bowls out of 3. He's extremely young. He's got that really long contract. And if he can keep Andy Reid around and keep a quality squad of players around him, do you think that's a possibility, or even something that the NFL would hope would happen, or would they rather not?
That's a really good question. So let me touch on the first part of it first. So I think it is a possibility. It's an unlikely possibility. And it's just, and the only reason why I say that is every year we have a surge of new, fantastic, great players who can take over that mantle at any time. Plus, the Chiefs do not run their system the same way the Patriots did. And I'm not saying the Patriots way was the only way, because God knows that is not true. But what we did see there was Belichick keeping his quarterback well underpaid. Now, that is one thing. I don't like to give Tom Brady too many compliments, but I will give him this. He was horribly underpaid his entire career. He kept him, and they kept him underpaid, and they would have one or two other stars. But that roster got churned over left and right all the time. And that is not what we're seeing in Kansas City. And if that starts to happen in the next year or two, you're going to see a little revolt from the Kansas City fans, because they think this team is going to stay together their entire careers, which we all know is not going to happen. But if you start to see that churning, it becomes a little bit better of a possibility. That just has to do with cap management, talent management, you know, all these things, draft management, all of it. And so I do think Patrick Mahomes himself has the talent to do this. I truly do. The only thing that concerns me a little bit is he's already had a few injuries. Now, this year did knock him out of any games it did before. And so we just have to kind of manage that a little bit. And that might come with age, because you'll notice as dynamic quarterbacks get older, Russell Wilson, even Aaron Rodgers, a few others, where they would do things that maybe put them in harm's way, they slow that way back as they get older. So hopefully Patrick will do that. But I can see that coming through, as long as that is managed. But I think in today's NFL, once again, like I said, that Patriots dynasty was an outlier. And so I don't know that you'll get it. Do I think he'll have a couple more, you know, in his future, a couple more Super Bowls in his future? Yes, I do. I think that he definitely has that talent level. But I think what you said was right. I think Tom Brady is really going to hold on to that record for probably quite a while. And it seems like he's not going to quit playing anytime soon, so maybe even more.
Yeah, I think one thing as well, I think, especially with the game now compared to, I know it's not that long ago when Tom Brady started, but I think that
it seems like it though, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It does. Just this year has felt like 20 years alone, like 2020, I should say. But the money in the game now, because we all know about Mahomes' contract, you know, $500 million. And you talked about Tom Brady being underpaid. So I guess like players now have an opportunity to get out of the game quicker than they would have normally. So, because obviously we all know the dangers that are in this sport, and a lot of players played maybe longer than they should have to make sure that they were comfortable for when they were done. But now with the money that players are getting nowadays, that they get the opportunity to retire sooner than maybe people would think that they would.
Mm-hmm. I do agree with that. And I think that more of these players are conscious of the future. And so we saw it this year. There were a couple of players who already have contracts to go work for networks, and they were still playing. And when they retired, they had these. And you see a lot of these players now, you know, more than in the past, graduating from college, getting master's degrees, because they know that they have a future. And so I think that plays into that a little bit. They're getting a lot more money up front, especially the superstars. And I think that with that comes the knowledge that they're not going to have to play until they're 40 years old in order to be super wealthy. Do you know what I mean? And so, and going back to Patrick Mahomes' contract, it was a great contract. It was a great PR moment. It was wonderful. I will tell you right now, that contract's going to be done a couple of times over the next few years. He's going to have to restructure and do this just simply because that it's unsustainable the way that they have it right now. And so, and that is really interesting. But already, even Patrick Mahomes, perfect example. He's already bought into the Kansas City Royals, which is the Major League Baseball team. His soon-to-be wife is now part owner of the women's professional soccer team here in Kansas City. They're buying and purchasing into Kansas City and extension for the future. So I think that we'll see that some of these players who maybe are starting to get a little too hurt a little too often, maybe pull out a little faster.
Yeah, and just we'll go back to sort of team a little bit, because the offense gets all the headlines, obviously with the type of players that they have on that side of the ball. But one thing that I've noticed this year with the Chiefs is their improvement on the defensive side, marshaled by obviously Tyrann Mathieu. But the backfield has gotten considerably better from some really good pickups, which included the likes of L'Jarius Sneed, who they got in the draft. Like, what did you make of their defense this year?
I think we saw this year what was carrying over from the end of last year. I think that we saw these players who were starting to mold together a little bit better, starting to play. I think the scheme came up a little bit better. They really started to kind of come into their own. And that's the thing with defenses. An offense, you can add one player and completely change the dynamic and it can just explode. But defenses take time. You know, you look at some of the great defenses over the history, and those players, when they played together, didn't have to keep an eye on who was next to them or if they were doing their job. They all played in complete synchronicity. That just takes time. And so I think that's what we saw out of Kansas City this year. It's still not their strength, I will say that. Obviously, we saw that up into the playoffs, the Chiefs hadn't won a game by more than 8 points since the beginning of November. And so they were still struggling stopping other teams, and they were allowing teams to stay in the games much longer than they really should have. But at the same time, once we've gotten into the playoffs, you've seen a little more consistency, especially in that Bills game. I was very impressed with that. And so I think that this year we're just seeing them really kind of come together as a group. And I hope that they, with the cap next year and all those question marks, I hope they can keep most of that group together.
Yeah, I think with the Chiefs defense, it's they have a bit of a leeway because they have Patrick Mahomes on the other side of the ball. So no matter if they let points go by them, they're just going to score more points in offense. So they had a bit more leeway. So that means they could probably have more time to gel where people aren't getting moved around so much, because now they know they're just going to score points and probably win the game anyway, which they do most of the time. So their defense has just gotten time to play together, and it really showed throughout the season, as you said, Dana. Like, I noticed when I was watching throughout the season that a lot of the time the Chiefs D seem to kind of slow down or tire, and now it just seems like they're continuing on to the fourth quarter of the game and just being able to hold their own now, as opposed to giving up as much.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's what I meant by that Bills game. You could just see it in that Bills game. Now, I will say, in that Bills game, I love the Buffalo Bills, but they had kind of, you know, deer in the headlights. I think that this game was really big, and they let it get really big in their head between their fans and everything. And that is an amazingly talented team that is going to be a thorn in the side for the Chiefs for a while. And so I don't want to take anything really away from their season. And so I do think that they were a little bit, had an issue there, but you just saw that consistency play after play out of the Chiefs defense, especially in that Bills game.
You mentioned there the Bills being a thorn in the side. of the Chiefs to come along, and we have Patrick Mahomes, we have Allen, we also have Lamar Jackson over AFC side. Do you think the AFC, with all these young quarterbacks coming up, whereas when we look on the other side, we had some extremely old quarterbacks, Tom Brady, Drew Brees. Do you think they're positioned for a lot of maybe Super Bowl run here going to the AFC side in the next couple of years?
It's definitely possible. What I find interesting is everyone was talking, just like what you said, oh, the AFC is so young and the NFC is so old. Well, that's cyclical. That happens because of how long, you know, quarterbacks are with teams. And the NFC was so dominant and so consistent for so long because they had those same quarterbacks for so long. And so I think that we're seeing a cycle here. So over the next handful of years, I think that you will see the AFC have a little more dominance or a little more strength in that area. But we have to remember what is now happening on the NFC side. You know, although he hasn't announced it, we all expect Drew Brees to retire, and you see Philip Rivers retiring, although, you know, he was in the AFC, I guess, but you see all those elder statesmen kind of starting to go. Brady will eventually. Ben Roethlisberger, I think, has said he's going to play for free next year so he can keep playing. But eventually Ben Roethlisberger will leave too. And so I think that then you'll start to see a young, you know, group of quarterbacks coming in there too. But at the same time, sometimes it takes a few, you know, quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, to really find your good franchise, you know, fit there. So it could be a few years before the NFC does catch up, but eventually it'll be cyclical, and we'll be talking about, you know, Patrick Mahomes, like we talk about Russell Wilson right now. He's in the middle of, you know, he's middle-aged, you know, for a football player. That happens to the NFC eventually too.
Right. The run defense is actually something I want to talk about heading into this game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Because we saw teams, and my mind goes back to the game against the Raiders, the first game, where the Raiders were able to run the ball on the Chiefs all day long, which was the main contribution to their win. And that's probably an area that the Bucs are going to look to exploit on Sunday. How important now are Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette going to be to deciding who's going to win this game?
Well, I think it's a huge part because, as we all saw, and I always have to preface saying no disrespect because I get eaten alive on Twitter, but so no disrespect to Brady, but we saw in that game between Green Bay and Tampa Bay that Tom Brady slowed down. Third quarter, his arm wasn't quite the same. He just started to look tired. So the only way to avoid that completely is to rely on the run game. And so if Kansas City is going to slow down, I have a theory on that too. But so if Kansas City really wants to wear out Tom Brady early, they're going to have to stop the run and force him to throw. And I think that that's probably what's going to happen, to be honest with you, because Patrick Mahomes will come out throwing. Now the Tampa Bay defense is so good right now. Like, they're crazy good right now. But at the same time, I think that if they want to see that Brady that we saw in the fourth quarter against Green Bay, the tired Brady, then they're going to have to figure out a way to completely stop that run and force him to throw that ball more than he really wants to.
And I had a question for you. It's along the similar lines. We've seen last week, or 2 weeks ago rather, that the Chiefs suffered, like, I think it was Eric Fisher had an Achilles injury. Oh, so he's out, obviously, for the Super Bowl. And they're missing another all-star right tackle. I can't remember his name. He's off the top of my head. But considering how we've seen the Bucs D-line go off just 2 weeks ago, do you see that playing much into this game? Because it's going to be like Shaq Barrett and JPP, they're going to go crazy is what I can see. So it's going to be a lot of quick pass and a lot of kind of screens and stuff like that from the Chiefs. Do you think that's going to affect the game as much as running the ball? Is it going to be as effective even?
I do, losing Fisher was huge. I think that was a huge, huge thing for Kansas City. At the same time, you have to remember the quarterback you're dealing with. Now, Patrick Mahomes did have a turf toe problem. He says he expects it to be 100% by game day because it's almost 100% now. For those who don't know, turf toe can last a long time. It can be really difficult to come back from. But at the same time, he looked okay against the Bills. So, and that his toe was nowhere near 100%. So I think that that's going to be a huge kind of counteraction to losing Fisher, and that is his mobility. And so he'll be more able, and the kid throws faster than just about anybody. He can throw that ball like nobody's business. And so I think that while we might see more pressure on Patrick Mahomes, we might even see him take more sacks than we're used to him seeing. I don't know that it's going to be overly affecting the game, just simply because they will adapt to that and they've had 2 weeks to do it.
And I think Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill are going to play a big part in that. If there's two guys you don't want getting the ball on a screen, it's them. That speed is going to give, I think, Tampa Bay a little pause maybe as to go all out and try and get the ball out of his hands early. I think they're going to more focus on keeping him in the pocket and try and make him make some mental mistakes and see how prepared he is and how well he can deal with him. Like you mentioned, in an excellent defense that's also very fast. So I think maybe Tampa are going to try and back their guys on the back end and see what they can get out of them, and then maybe adapt from there.
And I will say that when you watch Tampa Bay blitz, and you know, that it's, unless you watch film, a lot of people don't really pay attention to what personnel, you know, groupings are in. But Tampa Bay, when they would blitz, a lot of times they would use their safety and corners. And so you cannot allow that to happen with Kansas City. You have to have 1 to 2 people on Tyreek Hill. You have to account for Travis Kelce. And so I don't think that they would use that secondary in their blitzing near as much as normal. So I don't think that we'll see a ton of blitzing against Patrick Mahomes. But if that line can't get that timing just right, that's where it could affect. I don't think it'll come in the blitz.
Yeah, and look, we did see the backfield sort of get torched in their game area in the regular season this year, especially at the hands of Tyreek Hill, especially in that first quarter. What do you think the Bucs and probably the Chiefs as well are going to learn from that game? Now, I know in the second half it was a sort of a different story, but I think that was more the Chiefs taking their foot off the pedal a little bit and just the sort of bend, don't break mentality of sort of, okay, you can get a score here, but you're not going to win this game.
I think it's exactly what you said, is their foot will have to be all the way down on the gas all 4 quarters. And Patrick Mahomes said something to that effect in his press conferences this week, where he said that this is not a game where you stop playing. And I think it was a little bit of a dig to the 49ers, to be honest with you, the way I took it. But you don't stop playing just because you have a lead when Tom Brady's on the field. And he's absolutely right. Even a 43-year-old, 44-year-old Tom Brady, you have to trust that there is no situation that shakes him. And so therefore you have to keep all that more forward momentum. It's going to be the same for Tampa Bay. They are going to need the game of Tom Brady's, you know, elder statesman life, not young Brady, but this older Brady. I think they're going to need that from him. Just so, and it's got to be until, you know, the whistle blows, until the clock is at 0, because we have seen that nothing, you know, nothing is out of the realm of possible, especially in a Super Bowl. So I think that we're going to see, it could be a really high scoring game. It could be an absolute low scoring game. I don't really know what to expect from that yet. I'm assuming the first, it'll probably be a pretty high scoring game, but you never know if that Tampa Bay defense goes off and they get Patrick Mahomes' timing off, it could keep it to a point where Tampa Bay could easily keep up with them. So we'll have to see how that balance works out.
Well, sure. As long as it's not like that Patriots-Rams game, I think we'll all be happy. But I remember that. I had people over to my house for that one, and who have never watched football ever in their lives. No. And this was the game that I was trying to introduce them to football. And I don't think they've ever watched a game since, and I don't blame them.
I had the same thing for that there as well. We were watching it in the Hogs and Heifers and Swords at bar. And it was like halfway through, I was trying to tell people, like, it'll get exciting at some point. The game will become exciting. And then I just had to drink a lot of mojitos for that game.
It was definitely the ads that were definitely the highlight of that night for sure in my house, watching the ads or the halftime show. But no, yeah, I think you're right. I think we're hoping it would be more like last year's game in terms of excitement, and I think that we will get that. I know we're talking about how getting the timings right for the Chiefs defense to put Mahomes off, but the talent of Mahomes himself, I think he is able to adjust. And you know, I think the comment that's brought up over again and again this whole season is that he only learned to read defenses during the middle of last season, so
right,
he'll continue that learning there and reading that defense. And like that, if they've got, I know Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill are the main guys, but you still got Edwards-Helaire in the backfield to look after, as well as Hardman and Robinson. And I don't know, is Sammy Watkins
He's still questionable, I think. Yeah, I think that they expect him to play, but it's not 100% yet. But right. He definitely can make some fantastic plays because everyone's so busy keeping an eye on Tyreek Hill. So.
That's it for sure. And on the defense of the Bucs side of things, like we were talking about earlier on, and we saw it there on the NFC Championship game, they hound Rodgers throughout that whole thing. And there are issues on the line, like Jake said, with the Chiefs. I think, is it the Bucs that have the number one rush defense at the moment as well?
I think
as we talked about with Tom Brady being forced to maybe throw the ball more by stopping the run there, it's going to be quite difficult for the Chiefs to establish the run for themselves, because what a lot of people maybe not realize too is they do run the ball an awful lot as well themselves.
It's true. They didn't. Do you remember Patrick Mahomes' first year? The running back even get 2 plays a season? I'm telling you, like, it was not at all. But yes, they've definitely learned to balance that much more, and they run quite a bit. And yes, I think that if you look at this game, this is going to come down to the Bucs defense against Patrick Mahomes. That's where we're going to see this game play out. And that's nothing against Tom Brady, but I think in the postseason, he's only had like a 55% completion rate. And so I don't think he is not what is scaring the Kansas City Chiefs right now. They're giving him all the respect and all the, you know, platitudes that he deserves, but I don't think that's what's scaring them. It's going to be this defense and how they deal with that. This defense is so fun to watch. I am a defense lover. I'm not a huge fan of big, huge offenses. I love defensive games. And so I know that's different than 90% of the football fans, but I really love this Bucs defense. And I think it's really fun to watch. And I think that they do some things that throw off. I mean, we saw it against Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was so frustrated with that game, and it was great to watch because that defense just totally baffled him. But so I think that is going to be a huge part of this game. Do I think Patrick Mahomes can handle it? Mm-hmm, I do. But at the same time, I think that's really where the chess match of this Super Bowl is going to lie, is with that Bucs defense, who are so, so good.
I was checking today. I looked at the Bucs injury report, and it looks like the two safeties did not practice all week so far. So I don't know what their status is coming into the Super Bowl. That's Winfield and Whitehead. I don't know how that, like, Patrick Mahomes is clearly going to be able to take advantage of that if they don't play, because they are some incredible safeties.
I would think, unless they have broken bones, they're going to be in this game. You know, maybe they'll be on a pitch count or, you know, they'll have limited number of reps or whatever. But at the same time, I expect them to play unless there's something pretty dire. I think they would have called them out already if they weren't going to play.
Okay, so it's time to put your reputation on the line, Dana.
Oh, God.
I need a prediction. Who's winning the Super Bowl this weekend?
So, once again, an unpopular opinion for most American football fans is I think football has a lot to do with luck. I think the bounce of a ball, the tip of a finger, I think it has so much to do with luck. And of course, I always say everything looks shiny on paper until there's a single injury that throws everything off. So I preface this with that because I hate giving predictions because I think that the Super Bowl is pretty unpredictable of all games. I think Kansas City wins this game. I think that it's eventually going to be too hard to slow down Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and, you know, all of these players for that Bucs defense, especially if they're on the field a lot, which we saw they were in the Green Bay game. And so I think Kansas City's going to win. I think they probably will win by 7 to 10 points. I don't think it's going to be a huge, huge margin. I don't think it's going to be a blowout unless something happens to a player. But I do think it'll be a higher scoring game, probably in the 30s.
Before we let you go, you covered the NFC West as well. And we should ask the question because there was a big trade in the NFC West over the weekend. Yeah. Matt Stafford is now an LA Ram in exchange for Jared Goff. a third round pick in this upcoming draft, and then the first round picks for the next two drafts after that. So what did you make of this whole trade over the weekend?
Full disclosure for people who don't follow me on Twitter, I am a Seattle Seahawks fan. So I have a lot invested in this, sort of, because I laughed. I'm not kidding you. I started laughing. And it's not because of Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford is a solid quarterback. He is good. I don't think that he's an elite quarterback, but I do think that he's probably more consistent than Jared Goff has been. Okay. At the same time, the whole storyline of, you know, oh no, Detroit really wanted Jared Goff. No, I just didn't buy that in any way, shape, or form. Nothing against Jared Goff for Jared Goff fans out there. But I thought it was a lot until you really kind of break it down and look at it a little bit. One of those first round picks was, I'm sorry, you have to deal with this contract of Jared Goff. That was one of their consolation prizes for that. The other one, yeah, I think Matt Stafford is probably worth a first round pick. I don't know why they were so bent on getting Stafford, but we don't know what people want or what the Houston Texans are asking for Deshaun Watson yet. And I think that is probably something that's out of their wheelhouse, or they just didn't want to get into that mess. But what we've seen out of the Rams regularly is they don't like first round picks. They don't like to keep them. They don't like to have them. And now they don't have one till like 23. And so they haven't had one since 16. And so have they done pretty well without them? Yeah, they went to a Super Bowl and they've made the playoffs. So they've done pretty well without them. But I do think it's an interesting rebuilding, decision-making effort. They have Aaron Donald. They have, you know, a lot of great players. They also have a ridiculous cap. And so there's going to have to be some big decisions made. So I think that getting rid of Goff was probably their step in trying to keep the main players of this team together for a while.
I think the Stafford, like you mentioned, if you dig in deeper to the reason those picks moved where they did, I think it makes sense. But on the outside to people looking in, and maybe to the Texans as well, I think the value they got for Stafford has really exploded the Watson value. If you're getting two first round picks for whatever way, especially if the Texans aren't particularly pushed to get rid of Watson. I know it's pretty sure that he will move on, but if they're playing hardball and not trying to do him any favors by helping him out and really want to get maximum value, I wouldn't be surprised if there's nearly five first round picks going somewhere for Watson. It's just really rocketed his market value, I would argue.
Right. And if I was Deshaun Watson, I'd be really mad right now, because it just makes finding that trade partner even harder, you know, and bringing that in and finding a team. And he has final say. He has a no trade clause. And so if he has final say on what team he's going to go to, and he's put a couple out there, he's put Miami out there, but they have Tua. And so I don't know if they're willing to give up all their draft capital for him. And then really the most logical is probably the Jets, because they have the two first round picks that they got for Jamal Adams from Seattle, plus throw in one or two extra. And then, I don't know, Mosley, somebody like another good player, and you could get it. So they have a little more wiggle room. But what this Stafford trade did was just shrink their opportunity. Who has, like you said, 4 to 5 first round picks? And is any player truly worth 5 first round picks? I maybe Brady in his prime. I just don't think that there is that player. And that's not any, you know, disrespect to Watson, because I think he's a fantastic player. I just don't know if he's that important.
And so also, Denny, you mentioned that Stafford, not necessarily the flashiest player. He does have some great like sidearm throws, no-look passes. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see what he looks like with a little bit of a better offense around him. But with the way Wilson played against the Rams, do you think he's now become the third best quarterback in that division?
Or Russell as a Wilson?
Fan? Yeah, or as a fan, you're gonna argue your guys are still on top.
Oh, no, I don't know. I think he's definitely better than Stafford. I have no problem saying that out loud in any way, shape, or form. And actually, I think he is probably, I mean, if you got to look at it, you got Kyler Murray, who is inconsistent. God love him. He's a great kid. And I think he's going to be good if he got some really good coaching under him.
He's going to be good to watch at the very least.
Yeah, he's going to be fun. I mean, he's super fun. And then Garoppolo, whatever. But so I think, and I don't even know that Garoppolo will be in the division, begin of next year. So I would think that Russell Wilson, if you look at them between their stats, you take away the second half of this year, which obviously was very disappointing for Seahawks fans. And if you just look at consistency, numbers, wins, that sort of thing, I think you have to give a nod to Russell Wilson. I don't think Stafford bumps him in any way, but we're going to have to wait and see what happens to Matt Stafford. But we have to remember Matt Stafford had Megatron on his team, you know? And so it's not like he didn't have some opportunities there, but at the same time, coaching has so much to do with that. So that's going to be kind of the fun spin to watch the whole entire division next year.
So you're not too nervous anyway about watching the season next year.
I know there are a lot of Seahawks fans having a meltdown. Oh my God. And they're like, and then if San Francisco gets Watson, I'm like, they can't afford Watson and that's just not going to happen. And all this is going on. But no, I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah. But the thing that I looked at when I saw the Stafford trade, and I know the offensive line is obviously better than it is in Detroit, but is a Cooper Kupp and a Robert Woods really that much better than a Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay?
That's the question, right? And do we see Cooper Kupp going all the way down the field? Because Matt Stafford's strength is his long ball, right? Like the guy's got an arm for days. And so do we see that coming out of this offense? I don't know. I think that it's probably very exciting for Matt Stafford because he has this opportunity to have a really good defense that maybe he's not constantly playing from behind all the time. And I think that that's probably pretty exciting. I mean, I'd be thrilled to have Aaron Donald on my team, you know, why not? And so, but I do think that while the quarterback position might be slightly upgraded because Goff had some decent games. I mean, we like to call him Goof for a reason, but Goff had, you know, some decent games. Stafford is a slight upgrade. I don't know that it's a Deshaun Watson upgrade. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I really like Kenny Golladay. He can come play in the battle. I like him.
He's going to the Giants.
Is that confirmed or
no.
Confirmed, is it?
It's no, just that.
That's what they want. Yeah. Giants fans really want him.
There's no point in Kenny Golladay being tagged on a rebuilding team with Jared Goff. So let's just send him to the Giants.
Yeah. Get some draft picks for him.
As long as Daniel Jones is thrown from the Washington football team, I'll be too worried.
I was going to say, as long as Daniel Jones doesn't lose the ball or fumble it, so he can actually throw it to him.
Just to make the game a little more exciting. You don't know whether you're going to have the ball, you're going to give it away.
Well, I think one thing that maybe fans don't know, unless obviously you really follow the NFC West closely, that one of the biggest changes that is happening in that division with the Rams is coaches that they're losing. And
their entire staff.
Their entire staff, pretty much, that they're losing. Obviously, Brandon Staley going over to be Chargers head coach. And also, another name that they're after losing is their passing game coordinator, Shane Waldron, who is now the new offensive coordinator for the Seahawks after Brian Schottenheimer of quite mysteriously lost his job 2 days after we were told that he was going to keep it. What do you make of the move? I know he had his press conference there this morning as well, his introductory one.
Yeah, it was a bit of a snoozer, not going to lie. But like I told, so I do a podcast. I do the Real Hawk Talk podcast with the Hawk Blogger guys. And let me tell you, they were so excited about this. But they love the Sean McVay coaching tree. It's a whole thing with those guys. So, but what I told them is that, you know, the opening press conference today was boring because you're not going to want the kid to jump off the boat. I mean, look at what was that, the Lions coach that was telling people they were going to bite kneecaps. I mean, what was that? It was so bizarre, right? So you don't want that. But what I think that this does is bring a little bit of youth to this team. It brings a guy who has had a different coaching experiences with different head coaches around the league, and hopefully you can bring all of that information together. It seems to be the thought that he'll bring some of that kind of more dynamic, less predictable offense that the Rams had with him. But within the same time, in the same frame, you have to deal with what you have in front of you. And what you have in front of you is Russell Wilson, who is a certain type of quarterback who does things a certain way, although he says he's so willing to learn other things. Then you have these wide receivers. DK Metcalf is heads and tails above what they had in LA. And so it'll be interesting to see. And then Pete Carroll and his whole, you know, rushing thing that he loves. And I love a good run game, so I'm okay with that. But so I think it's going to be interesting to see what he brings to the table. Brian Schottenheimer was a fine coach and he's a very nice man, but I just don't know that he had the spark that people were looking for. And I think they're hoping that they get that out of Waldron. Now, after his press conference today, they might question that because it was kind of boring. But at the same time, I think that they're just looking for something new and different. And how funny is it? Brian Schottenheimer ended up in Jacksonville along with Daryl Bevel. Urban Meyer seems to really like Pete Carroll's coaching tree. So he just keeps bringing these people in. So it'll be interesting because Jacksonville comes to Seattle to play this next year. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, we're probably Trevor Lawrence there under center on his. But one thing that I wanted to ask about that, the move, there was, obviously we saw the first half of the season, the let Russ Cook movement obviously got to the attention of Brian Schottenheimer and he was able to throw the ball. Everything was going rosy. And then in the second half of the year, obviously, teams for one way or one reason or another figured Seattle out, and it was the lack of change or the like of able to change your game plan mid game before a game. And I think that it was interesting because I don't know if you watched it. DK Metcalf was on the I Am Athlete podcast series with Brandon Marshall and Chad Johnson, and they asked him, he says, what happened the second half of the season? He just said teams figured us out. So he obviously, and I'm guessing the rest of the offense knew that teams had figured them out, but there seemed to have been no effort on the coordinators or the play calling side to try and change things up a bit.
It's true, and we heard that in the Pete Carroll post-game press conferences. In the games that they lost, he said, well, we weren't making adjustments fast enough. We didn't adjust at halftime. And that was a theme we kept hearing game after game, because there was a lot of people who acted surprised that Schottenheimer lost his job. And I was not surprised at all, because you just kept hearing the same thing repeated over and over. And it was obvious to, you know, maybe not to a casual fan, but to people who pay real close attention to a game, that there was no changes being made. And it was very strange. And where we got, you know, Seattle fans got really used to being like, oh, they'll turn on the fourth quarter, it'll be fine, you know, because that's how it had been for so many years. That wasn't happening because there were no changes being made. It's like they thought they found the perfect recipe for Russell Wilson to win all of these games, and they didn't expect people to figure out the parts of the recipe. It was confusing. So I think that while there are a lot of fans who put this solely on the shoulders of Pete Carroll, that's not where the blame necessarily lies. They needed to have a little more, you know, responsibility from Russell Wilson, which I think that they got. At least that was the impression I got in his end of season press conference. And they needed to find someone who could adjust quicker on the fly, because it just didn't seem that Schottenheimer could figure out how to do that.
Okay, perfect. Well, then, thanks a lot for taking the time to speak to us today. Before we let you go, where can our listeners find your work?
Oh my gosh, I'm all over the place at this point. So let's see. So of course you can find me on Twitter, and it's at Dana OG. And then I am, of course, on OurTurfFB.com, Our Turf Football. That's who I write for. That's who we do a podcast for. And then I also do the Real Hawk Talk podcast with the Hawk Blogger guys. And then I also do End Zone Scoop with two gals from the UK, Liz and Shona. And we do that podcast every 2 weeks. And we have a great time on that one too.
Excellent. That's great. And thank you again for taking the time to speak to us. We hope you have a great time and enjoy the game on Sunday. And hopefully, fingers crossed, you'll be back at some time in the off season, hopefully to chat again.
I would love that. Thank you, guys.
Perfect. Guys, that is it for this edition of the Under Center podcast. Make sure, if you haven't already, please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel. That is the Dynamo Podcast Network, to be kept up to date with all the latest videos. Or if you prefer, subscribe to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/UndercenterPod, Twitter at UndercenterPod, Instagram at UndercenterPod, and TikTok at UndercenterPod. So very easy to find us there for sure. And we'll be back next week to review the Super Bowl. But until then, enjoy the game, and we'll speak to you next week.